Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
Hello, and I'd like to welcome you back to another episode of T-Bone Speaks podcast. And today we're going to continue our series by interviewing a local dentist, Dr. Jennifer Matthews, here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we'll have a two-way conversation about how she got her start, how she got to dentistry, how she decided to open her practice, some of the wins that she's having in her practice and some of the struggles that she's having in her practice, and what she's learned. And, you know, a lot of my goals with these interviews is to bring everyday dentistry to you, to let you hear what everybody is feeling out there and, you know, what's working for the traditional practice. Too often we're just listening to those who have practices that seem unattainable or who have practices that are funded by outside activities such as speaking and lecturing. And I think while I still have a traditional practice, certainly some of the things that I do in my own life and some of the things or decisions I make are subsidized by my speaking, lecturing, and workshops. So I would like to bring in some more traditional, everyday, non-speaker type dentists so that we can get an insight from them. And it's an opportunity for them to ask me questions about some of the things that are going on and how I can hopefully shed some light into their practice life as well. So I hope you enjoy this continuation of this series and look forward to it. And if you could do us a couple of favors, one is leave us a review on iTunes. And then number two is if you can submit questions by visiting www.tbonespeaks.com and submit either a written or voicemail question, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you. And I appreciate your patronage. All right. Today we are sitting here with Dr. Jennifer Matthews, who is a dentist down the street from me. How far are you, Jennifer, from me?
I think 8 miles.
8 miles. Yeah, but I should not talk to you. You're my competition, right?
Yes, I am. I get patients from your practice.
You should, by the way. They should. I would leave me for you too. Okay. So as I talked about this year of this season, my goal is to really reach out to, you know, what I call everyday dentists, or the, you know, non-speaking, non-dentists like that who have traditional practices and reach out to their practice, because that's probably more about what our listenership is. And I've known Jennifer, actually, we met, how long ago was that, Jennifer? Maybe 9, 10 years ago or more?
Yeah, no, I think I was a couple years out of school, so probably 9, 10 years ago.
Yeah, so Jennifer used to live maybe like 10, 15 houses down from me when we lived over in Durham, in the not so great part of Durham. No, it wasn't that bad. But so we met there, and then it turns out that she opened and bought, we have to get into that a little bit, a practice down the road. So Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you.
You feeling okay?
very nervous.
You shouldn't
You're
be.
Intimidating.
I'm not. Okay. Listen, just because I'm in my own house and I'm intimidating now. So tell us, tell the listeners, how did you become a dentist?
I became a dentist because I always wanted to be a healthcare provider. I grew up being the neighborhood babysitter, so I thought I always wanted to be a pediatrician.
And where'd you grow up?
In Eastern North Carolina, in a small town called Bath.
Like, do people shower there?
They do. Okay. It's home of Blackbeard the Pirate and the oldest town in the state. Very historic area.
B-A-T-H.
Uh-huh. With two syllables.
All right. So you grew up in Bath.
Uh-huh. Town babysitter. Thought I wanted to be a pediatrician.
It's better to be the town babysitter than the town something else.
Exactly. Anyway, so wanted to be a pediatrician, and about halfway through college, realized that I really wanted to be a mom more than anything else. And I started struggling with a career in medicine and how that could affect my ability to be at home and raise a family. And
so the accepted concept is that medical doctors work a lot. They are on call. They have rounds. They have, you know, essentially a 6-7 day a week job, depending on what you do.
And 4 years of post-grad plus another 4 of a residency or more.
Anybody in your family healthcare providers?
Nope. No. My parents were both school teachers. And then my grandfather passed away around the same time, and I realized—
What year would this be, if you don't mind me asking?
Probably 99.
So you graduated high school in—
97.
97, okay.
Realized I didn't want to deal with death either.
Okay.
So someone said, I can't remember, someone in college said, what about being a nurse? And I said, whoa, no, I'm way too bossy for that. And
that would be right up your alleys. Every nurse I've met has been bossy.
Right. But I want to be the boss.
Yeah.
I want to call the shots. I got you.
Little did you know that you'll never call the shots owning a practice.
You're exactly right.
But anyway, I digress.
Your assistants run the show.
Yeah.
They tell me all the time, you can ask the doctor who thinks she knows what's going on, or you can ask us who really knows.
Well, it's like when I'm teaching and I ask somebody, you know, what they're doing in their practice or how their practice runs. I don't want the doctors to answer. I want the team members to answer because I want the truth, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I can prep a crown in 5 minutes. I'm like, BS.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That thing's like 40 minutes. But anyway, so you decided that you didn't want to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm. So I went into dentistry and I loved it.
And you went to undergrad in?
At Carolina.
At Carolina, at Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest school on earth. Okay.
Absolutely. Go Heels. Okay. Graduated 01 in undergrad with a degree in political science because at the same time, I'm very independent and would refuse to major in biology or chemistry. So I majored in poli-sci and finished dental school in 2005. So I went straight through.
All right. So you got into dental school right out of college, essentially. Mm-hmm. You went to dental school. And did you ever think about specializing?
Nope.
Why not?
I was over school. Over.
Well, I guess if you didn't want to specialize in medicine, why in the hell would you want to specialize in dentistry? So like if somebody asked me, I would be somewhat truthful with them. And I would just say I had crappy grades. And that's why I couldn't.
I didn't have crappy grades, but what I will tell you is I worked so hard in undergrad to have that high GPA to be able to get in dental school that once you get into dental school, you get that relief of I'm here, I've made it.
And C equals DDS.
Exactly. Okay. I was not a C student like you were probably, but I just didn't have the desire for any more education. You know, I was done. When it was over, I was done.
All right. So what'd you do straight out of dental school?
First year out of dental school, went straight into a Medicaid practice, which was wonderful for me. It was a corporate practice, which was...
You know, every practice is a corporate practice.
True.
I mean, you're a corporated entity now, right?
Okay. True. Right. Yes.
So I call them large group practices.
Large group practice. That's a better term. So it was exhausting, but wonderful for me.
And when you say wonderful, what do you mean by that?
Because it put me on my feet. I was the only dentist in the practice. I ran the show. I had to get fast. I had to get confident. It made me a quick, better dentist very quickly.
And you think that was because of being a quote-unquote Medicaid office, or is that because of being by yourself?
Probably both. I mean, a Medicaid office, you do have to be pretty efficient and pretty fast. But yes, being by yourself, you have to be pretty confident and trust your decisions. You don't have anybody to bounce anything off of.
And how long did you stay there?
I was in the Medicaid practice for a year.
Okay. Why'd you leave?
I was exhausted. I didn't eat, drink, or go to the bathroom all day, 4 days a week. And after that, you're exhausted.
How is that any different than what we do now?
No kidding. This is true.
Okay, so 1 year out, you did a Medicaid practice for a year.
It was also a 45-minute drive, so I'll give you that too. So then I went into another large group practice, which I would call corporate because it was out of state owned. And I worked there for 2 years.
What was the difference? Did you enjoy that experience?
Enjoyed it more, but it was still very challenging. You know, it's very difficult to hear someone who is not a licensed dentist tell you how to practice dentistry.
But my assistant tells me how to do things right now, and she's not a licensed dentist.
But she's seen enough dentistry to know, right? She works with you every day. So it's very hard.
So I would say that's more of a personal mental issue that we all as dentists have.
True. But with someone that hasn't ever been in the trenches with a DO that turns into a pulponomy and root canal. And
so crown. I could say that about your insurance company.
That's true.
And you let them run our lives.
No, we let them pay for our lives.
Run our lives, same thing.
But it was good. It was a good experience. Ultimately, at that point, I knew I wanted to get into a smaller private practice and associate and eventually partner or go out on my own. And
what defines private practice?
Small practice, one or two dentists. Honestly, I was ready to buy a practice probably 3 years out. And my husband at the time was applying to med school and we didn't know where he would go. So I was kind of also in a bind of, we don't know where we're going to end up.
So I can't make that kind of risky proposition.
Right.
Okay. So you decided to, at that point, do what?
Continue to associate. I ended up temping and working part-time for a year. And then a wonderful opportunity was offered to me in 2010 by a good friend and dentist that wanted to expand. So he bought private practice in Raleigh and asked me, hey, I only want to buy this practice if you'll run it for me.
So you would be the solo dentist there as a non-equity owner, essentially.
Great. Yep. And it was a wonderful opportunity. It was close to home. It was a great practice, beautiful practice, kind of everything I dreamed up. So it was a no-brainer.
Okay. So I want to go back for a second. Mm-hmm. What did you learn in the Medicaid practice? Because now we're talking about 10 years ago or more. Mm-hmm. Okay. So retrospectively, what besides efficiency, what did you learn?
Well, a lot of clinical skills.
Okay.
You learn that not every simple extraction ends up simple. It often ends up surgical and crown breaks off and you're cutting things out. You learn that not every filling is as straightforward as you plan it to be. Sometimes some patients are covered in blood and saliva, and it takes a lot longer than you thought.
Were you doing a lot of crown and bridge there?
Absolutely. Very little.
Very little.
Mm-hmm.
Did that bother you? Did you know any better?
For sure, it bothered me. I knew that that's what I wanted to do.
What about endo?
Very little. Endo and Medicaid is only covered for, you know, adolescents under the age of 18. So if you're over 18, they won't cover it.
Okay.
So you do very, very little because those patients cannot afford it.
So basically lots of extractions, removable, and fillings.
Mm-hmm. So that is not what I wanted my scope of dentistry to be like.
From a long-term perspective.
Exactly.
But from a short-term perspective, it fit what you needed to do.
Absolutely. It paid the bills.
Did it more than pay the bills?
More than paid the bills. Absolutely. Okay.
So financially, it was a great opportunity.
For sure.
Okay. And then when you went to the more traditional type practice as an associate for a couple of years, what did you come out of there with?
More crown and bridge skills, more advanced dental skills, I would say.
Okay. All right. So still being a general dentist.
More advanced dental skills and more of an understanding of insurance plans.
Okay. Beyond Medicaid.
Beyond Medicaid.
Because Medicaid is $3 and we know what they cover and it's guaranteed to pay.
Right. So I learned very quickly that most patients are very insurance driven.
Okay.
And
they're just money conscious.
Exactly.
Okay.
As we all are.
Exactly.
But very money conscious, and you learn very quickly about insurance plans. And
I dislike it when people say insurance driven as if it's a bad thing. So if you got into it, and I'm not making, we all do it, okay?
Right.
So if you got into a wreck with your car, who's going to help you pick where you go and who's going to pay for it?
Your insurance.
So are you insurance driven?
Absolutely.
Does that make you a C patient?
No.
Okay.
But we also know that you don't get necessarily the greatest quality from certain body shops as you do.
Okay, but you still go where your insurance tells you you got to go.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're all insurance driven at the same to a certain degree.
We are.
But anyway, I just wanted to point that out because I always say the same thing. I'm like, oh, this insurance driven patient. What the hell are they doing here? Blah blah blah. But then at the end of the day, when we took my son to the emergency room last week, we pull out the insurance card and we become insurance driven, right?
We sure do.
So we should be more, mindful of patient situation, because if we were in the same situation, to a certain degree, we'd probably be the same way.
Agreed.
Okay, so you learn more.
I say all the time, I live in Briar Creek and half of my friends are patients.
Yeah.
But if I was not in their insurance network,
they wouldn't be.
They would not come see me.
No. You know, why should they throw away that benefit?
Right.
Okay, so you came out with a much better understanding of insurance.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else? More crown and bridge?
More crown and bridge, more advanced dentistry, more working in an environment, controlling your team.
Okay. Managing your team. Leading your team.
Yeah.
They control you.
They absolutely do. That was not the right word.
I know.
For sure.
I know.
But yeah. All those things.
Were you nervous making the leap to running your own practice, even though you're a non-equity owner?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I mean, yes, it was a new adventure. So anytime there's change, you're always nervous. At the same time, you know, this friend of mine was taking a financial risk.
A calculated one,
but wanting to please, and a new environment, new patients, new everything. So sure, I was nervous, but at the same time, it was living my dream finally too. I was in the environment that I wanted to be in.
Okay. And what was it like?
It was great.
Okay.
It was great.
This was 2010.
This was 2010. I should say it was great, but I'm not going to pretend that it was wonderful. I began in June of 2010, and in July of 2010, I got separated.
Okay. That was more of a personal issue, not a professional issue.
Personal issue, but I became a single parent very quickly, and running a brand new practice, working with all these new people. Yes, it's a personal issue, but we all have personal issues, even in our professional lives. And there, you know, your parents could pass away or someone could get cancer. It's all going to affect how we develop professionally.
Of course.
So it wasn't easy that first year, but the practice grew and we did great.
Was the practice doing well from the get-go?
It was, but it was still a very young practice. It was just a three-year-old practice.
Okay. So when you guys got it, it was only, so that practice had started in 2007. Mm-hmm. You guys acquired in 2010. Mm-hmm. So you guys acquired it after the bust, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
So
you're essentially starting over it to a certain degree. Not completely.
Really, we were, because there were some things that weren't being done correctly prior to his takeover of the practice, which was billing and things like that. But we continued to grow the practice and was finally able to live my dream, which was grow a practice where my patients felt like family members.
So in other words, they were lifetime patients.
Lifetime patients, which is what I've still done and what I want to continue to do. Very few people walk through my doors every day that I can't ask them something about their family or something that happened 6 months ago that they told me about. It's really important for me and my team that we get to know each patient on a personal level, not just on a tooth level.
Okay. And did you enter this arrangement knowing that you would eventually buy in or buy out or own 100%?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentist.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
No, I think I entered it thinking that I would buy in and we would be partners.
Okay.
I did not think that I would eventually take over, but that's just the way it led over time.
Okay. So when did you take over the practice?
September 2014.
Okay. So almost a little over 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what led to that?
Well, the practice was continuing to grow, and I was seeing it grow and knowing that I was helping it grow. And so I was ready to buy in.
So you initiated it?
I did.
Okay. Good for you.
So I was ready to buy in.
How long were you thinking about that before you finally pulled the trigger?
Probably 2 years, but it probably took a year and a half for it to happen. So,
of that 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Were you nervous about it?
Yes and no.
Were you worried that the person wouldn't want to sell to you and would tell you to leave?
Not really.
Not really. Okay.
I knew that I had grown.
Well, you know what you had.
And I knew the relationship I had with the patients.
Your patients probably thought you owned the practice anyway.
Most of them did. I thought you said all over the place.
No, they probably thought you owned the practice to begin with. So yeah,
they did. Most of them did, actually. They had no clue that when the transition occurred or even if it has. So I initiated it. And I think partnership was not something he was really interested in.
Okay. Look, good for you, by the way. I think that actually worked out better for you.
I do too. Now that I look back on it, I do too. Yes, it was much more of a financial responsibility.
But you knew what you were getting into more than anybody buying a practice off the street.
Right. And also having the autonomy of the decisions moving forward.
And you didn't have to really fear that your patients, you're going to lose 10%, 20% of your patients, because in theory, you shouldn't lose any. Your patients knew you as the sole person there.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. It was a good transition.
And what did you change in these last 2 years? From the day you became the person on the name on the door, the owner, and the buck stops here, what things did you, if anything, did you implement differently?
Oh my gosh, we did so much. First of all, we had 4 operatories, but we were outfitted for 5. I immediately upfit the 5th operatory.
So why'd you wait till then? Or why did you both wait till then?
I think money was his concern.
Okay.
For me, I knew that however much that operatory was going to cost, it could generate 3 times that.
Right.
I knew that from the beginning. We were already overbooked.
Okay.
And when you run behind.
So capacity was a problem.
Mm-hmm. And when do you not run behind? I mean, seriously, you always need an extra room at some point during your day. And that's our big thing, is making sure patients are seen on time.
Okay.
So that's one of the biggest things I did from the beginning. From a team standpoint, the team had not been given any raises in 4 years.
Were you in charge of that?
No.
Did you have any say in that?
No.
Did you fight for them?
Yes, but I had no.
And they stuck around?
They did. They liked
me. Why do I get people like that?
They liked me.
Yeah.
So that was one thing, is, several team members had raises, and we immediately implemented a bonus system.
Okay.
And I just think having someone that they could answer to daily was different for them as well.
Okay.
It was also hard for them, because what I've said to them for the last couple of years is I was big sister in the beginning.
Right.
Now I'm big mama.
Yeah. Now you're boss.
Yeah. So it was a change and a challenge for them as well, but it's all worked out.
And the same team members are pretty much there?
Mm-hmm. I did have to hire 2 new hygienists this year. One because one hygienist had a baby and went on maternity leave and decided she wanted to be a mama.
Okay.
And the other one just found a better opportunity, kind of closer to home.
Okay. That's their excuse typically, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was from a practice business perspective, things you changed. What did you change clinically? Or was it status quo?
Initially, it was status quo. In the last couple of years, as I've continued to grow, I'm trying to change things clinically. I'm trying to grow and develop more as a practitioner by taking more continuing education.
Were you taking a lot of continuing education the first 4 years?
A minimum.
Minimum. Okay. Why was that?
Money.
Money. Okay.
You know, it wasn't paid for.
Okay. Does it have to be paid for?
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. But I guess I get a better tax advantage now, even though my income has not really changed.
Okay.
From, in fact, if anything, it's probably lessened from being an associate to an owner.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
One of the challenges that I see, and I've been through four associates now in the last 6 years, and I think they all believe that they can make more money owning a practice.
Absolutely not. You can 10 years down the road.
And I even question whether that's true or not, because most associates, at least in North Carolina, typically paid 30%. Mm-hmm. And I would say most practices don't have a 30% margin.
Absolutely not.
So at the end of the day, if money is the driving factor, then I believe being an associate is not a bad deal. But you have to be willing to not have so much say or so much control and some of those things that come with being an owner.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I'm glad to hear you say that.
Well, there have been
glad many, and not so glad, but
yeah. Well, there have been many times over the last couple of years that I thought, oh my gosh, why the heck did I buy this practice? I made so much more money as an associate and I had a lot less stress. I didn't have to worry about the bills. I didn't have to worry
about payroll, rent, supplies, taxes,
right. Exactly.
Forms.
The overhead to a dental practice is absurd, and now you understand why patients feel fees are absurd.
And we all complain about how little insurance pays us.
Exactly, because they do. They do not pay the value of the service most of the time.
Well, I think our overheads have gotten out of control.
I agree. I will say, in the grand scheme of things, am I still, even though my income has decreased, am I happier? For the most part, yes. Because I don't have to worry about, is this doc worried that I'm not fulfilling his expectations? And then am I going to get let go and then have this non-compete clause that I can't practice within a certain mile radius? Like, I have job security. I have job security as much as I have patients, right?
As much as you take care of people.
Right. It is good to be able to make the decisions. It is good for me to say, hey, I want to learn sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start doing it and I'm going to start sending my cases to this lab and choose my labs and choose my supplies and choose my materials. I also do feel, and I hope, although you said, oh, I'm not sure, that in 5 to 10 years, my investment's going to be worth it.
No,
that
it will
my
be.
Business is going to be paid off, that I am going to be making the better income again. And this is essentially my retirement, right?
Right. Like, you know, the reason I say that is I meet too many people that buy or own a practice with as an associate mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they work in their practice and never work on their practice. They own a practice and not a business. And too many times, if you tell somebody, well, I own a business, they think you're a multiple group practice, multiple ownership. You're all about the bottom line. And for me, I mean, running a business, I run a business sometimes better than some days. Okay. Some days better than others, but I run a business in the sense that I make decisions based on the numbers.
Right.
Like, for example, like right now, I'm saying to myself, why am I working this hard if there isn't the reward at it?
Right.
Like, I have two more people this year, and our numbers aren't equivalent of two more people higher. So I'm saying, why am I doing this? What's the point? You know, like, some people get off on saying, I have a $1.6 or $5 million practice, but you can have a $500,000 practice and make $250. You can have a $1.4 million practice and make $250.
Right.
You know, so which one, I mean, I would rather have a $500,000 practice making $250 because that person is going to be much less stressed, much less issues that can create challenges than somebody that has a $1.4 million practice.
Absolutely.
So that's where I come from with that.
No, I agree with you. So that's one of the things about owning a business is you are going to have to work your fanny off for it to be successful.
And how do you balance being a single mom? Because you've been a single mom since essentially you've been in this practice.
Mm-hmm. It's hard.
And your daughter is Sailor, correct?
Sailor.
And she's nine.
Yep. She turned nine on Monday.
Okay.
It's hard. You know, her dad and I do share custody. So she spends a lot of time with her dad. So that helps. But it is really hard because you leave one job and you start the next. And essentially the next job is the most important one.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3d-dentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
I think women are the greatest creatures in the world. I mean, I really mean that. And I don't mean creatures in a bad way, but I think we're all creatures. We're creatures of habit. We're creatures of, you know, different things. But I don't think men, most men at least how about this man, okay, doesn't even begin to understand what it's like to be a female. Like, I look at my wife. She's like you. She's a working professional. She works just like I work. Maybe she doesn't travel and speak like I do, but she works. And then she comes home, and I start my second job when I get home, which is my speaking education and doing all the things that are involved with that. And she starts her second job, which I give her no credit for at the end of the day, or I keep, you know, I give her credit for it, but you know, I don't realize how hard that is.
It is hard.
You know, and when I come home after being on the road for 2 or 3 days, and she gives me that look, I just think she's being mean. And really what she's being, she's like, you take these damn kids and give me a break. For a little
exactly.
Bit.
It's a whole new job, but it is the best job. I could not do it without the help of my community of friends. Mm-hmm. I'm so blessed with an amazing community of friends that are always willing to help whenever they can. My mom just recently moved to Raleigh last year, so she's been very helpful, and that's helped.
From Bath?
Well. From Bath.
Bath.
From Bath. And one of the other things was changing my hours at the practice. Okay. We decided, and this helped my team as well, because most of them travel.
They're females. Yeah.
They're females, and most of them travel a good 30 to 45 minutes. So we changed our schedule to Tuesdays and Thursdays. We work 7:30 to 3:30. We don't take a lunch, and we just work straight through. And having those 2 days a week that you finish with patients early, I'm not saying I leave the office early.
Of course not.
But finishing patients earlier, that's helped as well, which brings us back to what a great profession dentistry is, because we can be our own bosses and make our flexible schedules.
You control your destiny.
Yeah.
You can, you know, what I always tell people, and the listeners have probably heard this from me, is at the end of the day, whether it's professionally or personally, we're after three things. We're after either more time, more money, or more satisfaction, you know, which could be happiness or however you want to look at it. And see, that's what I think dentistry gives us. For me, I went through a phase where money was more important. You know, when you have none, it's important. And so money was the most important thing for me. You know, being able to pay my bills, secure my future, being able to secure my family and things like that. And now I'm going through a phase in the last few years where time has been the most important thing for me, which is, hey, I want to spend time with my 6-year-old, 8-year-old, 10-year-old. And, you know, with the way things are for me between the practice and the training and speaking, you know, that time, unfortunately for me, means that it's not on a daily basis necessarily, but it's more of 1 week at a time. And money and time still matter, but now it's more about, because in the United States, you can't live without money.
No.
Okay. I mean, bottom line, you can't. So now it's more about satisfaction in my practice. Am I doing dentistry that I enjoy doing? Am I rewarding my team?
Bingo.
You know, am I bringing them up? Am I giving them a living? You know, for, you know, and this is about you, but now you made me think about it. I have been a staunch opponent of providing medical plans to team members. Staunch opponent to it.
Really?
Yeah, where I've, in the past, until and through this year, I've always given them a dollar amount, go buy your own health insurance. And unfortunately, health insurance has gotten wacko. I mean, it's outrageous how much it costs, and their compensation hasn't kept up with the increases in health insurance. And when you take somebody that's making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, at the end of the day, that's not a situation where a $200, $300 increase in premium is easy to absorb.
No.
You know, for me, for my premium to go from pre-Obamacare, my premium was $450 for my family. And now it's $1,400 for my family. You know, for me to absorb that $1,000 a month, at the end of the day, I don't like it, but it's whatever. It's no big deal, okay? But I finally came to the realization for them that I needed to do it. And yes, it's going to cost me more. And yes, I absolutely hate the fact that I can't control my expense because from year to year,
it keeps going up.
It's up, down, left, right, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't go up, the benefits get worse, you know, somewhere or another. And somebody's always going to bitch and moan about it.
$75 to go to urgent care.
Right. You know, and
sorry.
So then, no, that's fine. So starting in 2017, and this is a real departure for me, we're going to be offering a group medical plan, which is just hard for me to do, but my team deserves it.
We do that.
Yeah. I mean, I fought it tooth and nail. And then the other thing is we've had in place, and I really want to do this part of it, but we've had in place is a retirement program that very few people participated in. And I want to find out what it takes for people to participate. So if I could, I would make it mandatory for people to participate in it, because at the end of the day, if they put 3 or 4% in, it's doubled because I automatically match it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, there's no reason not to put, I try to explain it to them. Dude, this is dumb not to put 3 or 4% in. It's totally stupid.
So are you going to do it?
I can't force
IRA
them to do it.
Or 401k?
It's a simple IRA.
Yeah.
Yeah. 401ks are, in my opinion, much more complicated, more expensive to run.
They are.
You know,
I'm looking at the same thing for our practice as well.
You know, and so I want to help them and do as much as I can. And I really, really want them to be successful. And honestly, I want to surround myself with people who want me to be successful, and for me to be part of my success is in raising other people around me up and sitting down and having conversations. Like I always talk about my assistant Liz, who's my longest employee now, at 9 years. And, you know, I was sitting down with her. I said, Liz, you're not going to be able to do this forever as a chairside assistant. That's backbreaking work, if you ask me. So I said, you know, I want you to start thinking about 2-3 years ago. I said, I want you to start thinking about the next phase of your career. How are you going to grow with this practice? Because selfishly, I'm helping her, correct? I'm making her life easier. But selfishly, what's happening for me is if I make it so that she grows, the practice will grow.
Right.
Because who drives practices?
Our team.
Our team. We drive the vision for the practice. But our team actually drives the practice. So if I can get them to buy into a better life for themselves, they will drive you forward. I mean, it's absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how if you can get them to buy into that. Like I talked to my hygienist. I said, listen, if you did 2 Invisalign cases a week, you wouldn't have to do hygiene.
Now, do you pay your hygienist on Invisalign?
No, I said to her, if you made it so that our practice, that you did 2 to 3 Invisalign cases a week, I'll pay you the same. You won't have to do hygiene.
Wow.
I'll just let you do the 2 to 3 hygiene Invisalign cases a week.
You mean educating the patients on the benefits?
I don't care. No, I'm saying actually you could just like, okay, so I believe in a concept of champions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have a sleep champion. We just started having a night guard champion. We have an implant champion in our practice. And so what I believe that happens when you do that is if you tell people a vision, like I told Liz, if you can do 15 to 20 sleep appliances per month, I'll let you just do that. Nothing else. Your sole role in the practice will be sleep appliances. So that means you have to go out and market them. That means you have to manage the patients. That means you have to do all of those things. Then you got to learn how to do it and actually deliver on the results. But then you can do that. So would you rather see, as an assistant, 30 to 40 patients a month doing sleep appliances? Because not everybody's going to say yes. Okay, or would you rather see 8 to 10 patients a day tearing down rooms, setting up rooms, and doing all of that?
Well, the first, for sure.
Of course, right?
They would all answer.
So what I say is, that's the carrot. Okay, and I look at them and says, you make it happen, I'll support you along the way. You own it as the champion, and you tell me what you need. And then you bring in or lean on whoever we need to lean on to make it happen. And we're there. You know, and that's what I'm trying to get somebody to do with Invisalign in our practice, or orthodontics, whatever you want to call it. And I'll say to them, listen, so let's say you're making XYZ dollars. So let's say a hygienist, okay, what do you want your hygienist to do? $1,000 a day?
Mm-hmm.
So they work 4 days a week?
Yes.
So that's $4,000 a week.
Right.
So how do you care how they do that $4,000 a week?
I don't.
So why won't you just say...
As long as it's quality.
Right. So why don't you say do 1.5 Invisalign cases a week?
For sure.
And that's the same thing. It's the same revenue to you.
Mm-hmm.
Take out the lab bill. You do 2 Invisalign cases a week.
How are you getting your hygienist to do an Invisalign case? Are you talking about educating the patient on the benefit of it?
Sure. Because I can't take somebody out of hygiene. I'm just using hygiene as an example. Okay. So whatever it may be, but I think hygienists are perfect for that personally. Okay. You can't just go from doing hygiene to the next day asking me to pay you as a hygienist to do cases that may or may not exist.
Right.
But what I'm saying is if you can start creating that awareness, starting now, 1 year from now, you can stop doing hygiene and just manage all of our Invisalign cases. And then I said to you, and I say to them, I said, listen, so that means you need to train the rest of the team on how to bring it up. Because once you get good at it, once you start seeing that you as a hygienist are producing X number of Invisalign cases and the other hygienist isn't, now once you get out of hygiene, your pool has gone away because you're not seeing those patients. You're depending on somebody else referring those patients to you.
Right.
So now
exactly.
You got to bring that other person up with you so that way you can get to that. Does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, I love it.
So we're trying to make, so we have a night guard champion now.
And how is that working?
We just started it. I looked at Meredith and I said, Meredith, you're going to own night guards in the practice. So every patient through hygiene that needs a night guard, your job is to take care of them. Now, you may not take the impressions. You may have the hygienist do it because you're busy doing something else. But all the hygienist has to do is, or the assistant, the other assistants, they take the impression and they're done. They leave it on your desk. And your job, your role is to send it to the lab. If we make it in-house, which we don't, but we send it to a lab. Your job is to make sure that the case gets to the lab, make sure it comes back, make sure we pay that bill, make sure we get the patient back, make sure that we have a recall. The other thing I don't think we ever realize is you need to have a recall for your guards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really do.
Because if I make you a guard today, how long is that good for?
Probably about 6 months before I need an adjustment.
Okay, or maybe 2 years before you've worn through it.
Right.
Okay, and so and you talked about sleep, and we learned this lesson just yesterday, is you should have a recall on your sleep patients every 2 to 3 years. Not necessarily, like when I say recall, that doesn't mean bring them back in. That means every month you should run a list of this month, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, who did we do a sleep appliance on? Because now they're qualified to do another one.
Every 2 to 3 years.
Every 2 to 3, depending on the insurance plan.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pay for an appliance XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Every so often. Some plans have no limitations. They can get one every year. And so to me, you set those recalls so that you can have your own funnel of patients consistently going through that over and over again. We're so good about it with cleanings, a $60 service, and was so bad about it on thousands of dollar services. It's unbelievable how stupid we are sometimes.
We are.
And if I'm not saying I'm doing it. We learned it yesterday because we had a patient in the chair who I knew I made a sleep appliance for. I just didn't remember when. And I looked at her and I said, Mrs. Jones, when did we make that appliance for you? She goes, oh, probably about 4 years ago. I said, how often are you wearing it? Well, not as much as I used to. You know, it's a little tight. It rubs a little bit. I said, hey, have you met your deductible for the year on your medical plan? Oh, yeah, I had wrist surgery. I'm like, God, this is easy. I said, why don't we make you a new appliance?
So did you have to do a new sleep test?
Not always. So we have to look. Every plan's going to be different, but not always. Okay, because the insurance knows you have sleep apnea 3-4 years ago. Uh-huh. So generally speaking, you're good to go.
Okay.
So for her, it was a matter of taking an impression. In our office, digital, you know, doing the pre-authorizations and stuff like that, and making an appliance. So that hygiene visit turned from $100 into $2,600 that day. It would have been better if we had the recall. So now, after that experience, I went to the practice, I said, print out every sleep appliance I've ever done and the date. And we need to start calling these patients. You know, because number one, they need it again. And more importantly, I just want to know, are you still wearing it?
Yeah, I have a patient that came in this week and he has a sleep appliance made from another dentist that needs to be relined. I mean, it's...
Don't reline it, make a new one.
Well, exactly. So that's what we're working on.
Yeah. So it's the same thing. So anyway, I interrupted you and went on my soapbox. I apologize.
No, I love it.
Okay, so let's talk. What's been working for you in your practice? What are you successful at? You sound like you have a good balance in life.
I do. I think what I'm most successful at is patient relationships and team relationships. You know, my big thing is making my team feel rewarded and happy at work and challenged, but also that every time a patient comes in, they do feel like they're in a family dental practice and in a family environment, and then they're not just another number.
They're coming in and out.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So you said rewarded, and you talked about a bonus system. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that. I think that's an area that we, generally speaking, all struggle with.
For sure. So I don't think rewarding is necessarily all monetary.
No, it's not always.
So I think it's working in a positive environment and getting good feedback and a pat on the back every now and then. But
that would be sexual relation harassment if I did that.
Exactly. No, but I'm talking, you know, just saying, hey, what a great job you did today. Like, thank you so much. Or you did a really great job explaining that procedure to the patient. Or thanks for having my back and getting that room turned over and, you know, adding this patient in. I think those are the daily rewards they need to hear. They do need financial rewards as well. So, you know, based on our daily production goals, my assistants get a bonus every month. And then also hygiene does as well if they produce that $1,000 a day. I reward my office manager on her collections.
Your incentive system is individualized. Mm-hmm. So, for example, let's say your hygienist does bad and your office manager collects great from something, whatever, from everything else in the practice.
Right.
Your office manager still gets rewarded.
She does.
Okay. That's great.
She does. And
are these preset numbers and preset goals, or is it just on a whim how you feel?
Both.
Because
sometimes I might not have a hygienist that makes her goal, but she worked her fanny off, and her energy and her attitude and her team playing at work was amazing. And I want to reward that. I want to say thanks for being such a great team player. Thanks for trying so hard. I decided to do this for you this month.
Good for you. And what? Give me an idea. What are those numbers? Just a rough range.
I mean, if the
hygienist... $5, $10?
No. If the hygienist does the goal, which is $1,000 a day, it's a $200 bonus.
For the month. Okay. So they have to average or do $1,000 per day?
Average,
you're kidding.
Mm-hmm. That is not including insurance write-offs. I mean, after write-offs, I'm probably in the hole, but just to reward good behavior or whatever, maybe $100, maybe a gift card, maybe...
The little things.
Maybe I think a as manicure a woman, and pedicure.
I think as a woman, you have a distinct advantage here. That's unfair.
I think I do too, but I think as a man, you have a very distinct advantage in that women respond to men very differently. So in an
usually
all,
in a mean way.
No, in an all-female practice, we challenge each other.
Yeah.
Whereas your assistant may not challenge you. It's Lord T-Bone.
No, my T-Bone. Let me tell you this. There are some people that may disagree with me that have worked for me in the past, but here's what I will tell you. The people that I love the most, that are with me the longest, challenge the heck out of me. They call a spade a spade. Because, look, I appreciate that because that's my personality to other people. And that's what I want to me. I want people to just say, listen, that's BS, what you did there. Like the other day, I had a patient come in, honestly, we're trying to do a three-unit bridge on the patient, and they're asking me all kinds of questions. And I'm like, dude, how many consults do I need to have with this patient? I've already spent 45 minutes talking to them about this three-unit front bridge, and now they want me to do it for the insurance fee, only for the insurance fee. And I'm like, I've already spent an hour on this. How the hell am I going to make any money? And I said, just tell the patient, I don't want to see him anymore, right? And my hygienist came in and said, you can't do that. I said, sure I can. She says, yes, you can, but you shouldn't. That makes us all look bad. That makes me like, how am I going to look that person and say that I agree with that? And she sat me down and said, listen, you need to suck it up and sit down and meet with this person and make it happen. And I'm like, all right, I did. And that's just not me being like a wuss and just doing what they say. That's me saying, you know what, you're absolutely right.
That's great.
And so I did it. I still hate doing it, but I did it.
I know. But I think in many ways it's different woman on woman.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to take things differently from each other.
Yes.
You know, I could say, hey guys, why didn't this patient get called or blah, blah, blah to follow up with the night guard or Invisalign case? And it's taken very differently than if you said it. If I say it, I'm saying
it. I make people cry, apparently.
Oh, really?
Okay. No, not because I'm mean, but it drives me nuts. Women cry.
Yeah.
I mean, women cry, right?
Yeah.
And so I'll be talking to somebody, and I'm not being mean, but I'm just asking tough questions, and they'll cry, and I'm like, all right, I got to go. Like, literally, I got to go.
Yeah. I will say that's probably my biggest struggle, is I struggle with being the, having the hard conversation and being the big bad B word.
Pulling your big girl pants on and having to be, you know, my hygienist, Megan, who's been with me a long time now as well, she says, oh, looks like you have to put daddy pants on today. I said, yes, today I have to be daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll be back to being, you know, one of you guys a half an hour from now.
Yeah.
And then they all know what that means. And I tell them I hate having to do this.
Me too.
I don't want to do this.
Don't make me be the police officer.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. I just want to be one of you. I want to come to work, have a good time, and take care of people and do all of that. All right, so talk to me about some of the things and areas that you want to improve or struggles you're having clinically or business-wise so we can,
it's not where I want, it's where I'm going to improve. I'm going to implement sleep medicine in my practice.
All right, so let's talk about that real quick. So you're saying sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, what does implant? So I'm going to ask tough questions, okay? Mm-hmm. So I have permission?
Somewhat.
Somewhat, okay. All right, when you say you're going to implement sleep, what does that mean to you?
It means we're going to start saving people's lives. We're going to do...
Okay, you can just take out infected teeth and save people's lives.
No, we're going to save people's lives with their sleep. We're going to start doing a lot more mandibular advancement devices.
Okay, so what's a lot more mean?
And we're going to... Well, we're going to start doing some.
Okay, so...
Okay, we're going from zero to nothing here.
Okay, so this is why I ask, okay?
Okay.
So I think a sure sign way of creating failure or having failure is not defining what you mean by we're going to start implementing sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want us to come up with a plan.
Short-term goal.
Yes. What is our short-term goal?
Short-term goal, minimal, one a month.
Okay, so we want to do one a month.
One a month, but that's my minimal.
Does that mean you have to do 12 next year, or does that mean you have to do one?
It means I have to do 12 next year.
Okay, so I
would love to do 24 next year.
Okay, so let's redefine that. So I want you to do one a month for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and then two a month for the next 6 months.
I would love that.
Okay, so then let's write that down, that we're going to do one a month for 6 months and two a month for 6 months after that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a low goal.
I think it's a low goal too.
But it's from zero. You can't go from zero to 10.
You can't.
You can't. And this is what I fight, because we've really accelerated things when it comes to sleep in our practice in the last 2 years and the last few months, okay? I struggle sometimes when I say, like I, when you came in, I said, oh my God, we're doing XYZ number of appliances this month. And I need to learn to bite my tongue because you can't go from zero to that.
No, I can't.
Overnight. It takes 1 year, 2 years, whatever it takes, or it takes putting resources at it.
Exactly. It's like doing a good root canal.
Yeah. You got to tackle one canal at a time.
You do. And you get good at them after such and such number of root canals, and it takes less and less amount of time and less amount of education. But I have got to start low and aim high.
All right, so how are we going to achieve this?
Well, we bought the Metabite Junior.
Okay, so you're going to start doing HSTs, home sleep testing.
We're going to start doing home sleep testing. We're going to change our medical histories, and I'm going to get my team trained. I hope my office manager and I are hoping to come to your medical billing.
Good.
Course.
Good. We'll make
in
that
March,
happen.
Because that's probably my biggest challenge right now. You know, I only have one office manager front desk, and I just hired someone else this month part, and she's going to start part time and then hopefully move to full time. But, you know, I've been trying to manage the medical billing on my own too. Mm-hmm. And
you're outsourcing it?
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with outsourcing. I want to come back to the HSTs.
Well, I'm outsourcing, but still that takes time.
Yeah.
Me emailing and faxing and saying what's, you know, you're getting a...
You might as well do it yourself at some point.
Right.
For the amount of work that you do from the outsourcing perspective.
For sure. But even learning the outsourcing perspective is a whole new ball game.
And, you know, the challenge with that is that each company has their own process, and their process may not translate into what you could do internally. But I want to come back for a second, okay? Because I really want to define our goals here, okay? So we own an HST machine.
Yes.
Okay, so it costs you $8 each time you use it.
I'm not sure
I can tell you because you have the same one I have.
Okay.
Okay, so it's $8 each time you use it in disposables.
Okay.
Okay, so if your goal is to do one per month, what's your goal for HSTs per month?
I don't know.
All right, let's set one. Let's say you need that's 50% rate. That's too high. Let's say you need to do 5 HSTs per month.
Okay.
Okay. So if you do at least five HSTs per month, you will have more than one patient qualify, because you need more than one patient to qualify to get one to say yes. Correct?
So
you need at least 3 people to have sleep apnea to say one to say yes.
Okay.
So to have 3 people have sleep apnea, you got to test more than 3 people. Okay. So you're going to have to test 5 to 6 people.
Yeah.
All right. So... Are you kind of seeing where I'm going here? I'm going backwards.
No, I like it.
Okay, so we need to do 5 HSTs. What is it going to take to do 5 HSTs? You answered one question. You're going to have to change your medical history.
Okay. More pre-screening, more training for my team.
Epworth, the sleep questions. You're going to have your team. What are you going to do with your hygiene? Because that's where a significant amount of them are going to come from.
Train my hygiene team on what to look for.
Okay.
Large tongue. Narrowed airway. I'm sorry, I keep coughing.
You're fine.
You're going to have to talk for a minute.
Okay. We're looking at large tongue, narrowed airway, tori. The other thing we can look for is what I call the roller coaster arch, lower arch, where the anterior teeth are higher than the posterior teeth. And that typically happens because an enlarged tongue sets on the teeth and it prevents those teeth from erupting, and then the anterior teeth erupt. Okay, so those are the kind of things that your hygienist can look for. Okay, so we have a goal now, I think. So we need to screen more patients. We need to get 5 to 6 people into an HST to get one case a month.
Yes.
Okay, so I don't want you to just go back and say we need to do one case per month, because that's not showing them how to row the boat. That's like saying we need to get from here to there. And the question is, how in the world are we going to get there? So to do it, you're going to have to screen. You're going to have to do HSTs on more people. So you're going to have to offer it. So the other thing I would tell you that you're going to have to do is, here's what I encourage you to do. Have everybody in your practice do an HST.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Better yet, you're all female practice?
Yes.
Have them all do it on their significant other, on their bed partner.
Right.
Okay. Because... When I did that, we saw a couple of my people said, oh my God, I never knew my husband, boyfriend, wife, whatever it is, had this. I just thought they just snored and it was normal. And so when you can create that awareness internally, they'll start talking about it to your patients a lot more.
For sure.
All right. Beyond sleep, what else are we going to do?
To grow in the next year?
Yeah.
I'm planning on buying a digital scanner.
Okay.
So learning that.
So a digital impression system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. Why just digital impression? Why not milling?
I'm just not there yet.
Okay.
First of all, because it's crazy expensive.
And it's $100,000.
I'm not ready to go there until...
That's $3,000 a month.
I know. I'm not ready to go there until I have this practice more paid off.
That's fine. That's fair enough. I'll disagree, but I won't argue with you on that.
Okay.
One thing at a time.
Right.
One thing at a time. I'm going to pick and choose my battles with you.
Okay. You know, obviously hiring someone else up front.
Okay. So you need more help in the office.
Yeah.
So when you hire somebody, you've got to produce more.
Otherwise,
they're taking out of your pocket.
This is true. But you also have to have, in order to produce more, someone to be able to answer the phone. And where we are getting is my office manager front desk. You know,
have you thought about outsourcing your phone answering?
Well, how can they schedule patients based on that?
Let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
I'm not saying to do it, okay? Because see what happens is we go through this zone, okay? And I learned this from my dad. I don't know what we were talking about, but he helped me understand this. Is you go through this point where typically most of us in business hire the person too late. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're hiring a person because you're already missing calls.
Mm-hmm.
And because your front person at the front is already basically, it's too much. Overwhelmed. Okay, it's too late. I'm not saying don't do it. You can't. I'm not saying it's not fixable, but it's in true business, it's too late. You need to predict. Great businesses budget and predict what's going on, and they staff and do all those things based on what they expect to do, not staff based on what they just did. So in our dentistry businesses, we typically do it the opposite way. We staff based on what we just did, and we don't staff based on what we're going to do. And the challenge there, and you're a great example of this, is, well, I can't afford a full-time person, but I need something. And that's where I say you should at least explore the option of outsourcing. So here's how outsourcing worked, because I did it for a short period of time because I walked in one day and somebody drove me nuts and I said, you're gone. And it was my one person at the front that answers the phones, and it was December. Okay. And my team looked at me like I was nuts. I said, don't worry, I got a solution. And they say, what's the solution? I said, we'll outsource it. And they looked at me like I was foreign. And I am foreign, but that's different. So here's how it works. In today's world, have you ever seen anybody log into your computer and help you with technical support?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you ever seen call forwarding, where you forward your phones from one place to another?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how outsourcing works. So you can have a person. When we say the words outsourcing, typically people think of India, China, Philippines, places like that. But you could have a mom from home, okay, or company answer your phones, a specific phone, a specific ring where they know it's always your practice. It rings one way and it's your practice. And that person could have dedicated remote access to your computer and they would see your schedule. So that person, see, in today's world, that person doesn't have to be sitting in your office in your chair to see your schedule. They can have full-time access to it through remote access. So you can outsource.
That's awesome.
Okay, so just like you can outsource a billing in your practice, you don't have to do any of it. I'm talking about dental billing statements. You can totally outsource a lot of those things. Sometimes it costs less, sometimes it costs more, but it's an option in an interim basis until you get to that point where you can prove to yourself. The other problem with hiring people is it's hard to get rid of them, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievably hard to get rid of them.
For sure.
Do you ever not hire somebody because like, oh my God, I need somebody. Well, it's December, but what am I going to do in February, March, April when it's slower? So one of the things with outsourcing, it's a quick email and say, I don't need you anymore.
Right.
You know, it's not a relationship where you say, I've taken you from somewhere else. Your livelihood depends on this. It's a contract.
Right.
You know, I'm going to hire you for 30 days. If it doesn't work, we'll move on. Okay. But if it does work, then you know that you've got something that works and you need to either bring it internally or you continue with the outsourcing.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got? What are you going to do? Implants.
Sometime in the next 5 years.
Why?
I don't know. I'm scared.
Okay. So what do we got to do to get over that?
More education.
All right. So you're scared of a physical activity, and your answer to that is to take more book classes.
No. Not necessarily book classes, but...
But that's what education is, isn't it?
You didn't give a book for sleep apnea.
I did. We gave you a handout.
Okay. Yes, more book classes.
All right. What other goals do you have? You want to take more time off?
For sure.
All right, so how are we going to do that? How much time are we taking off now?
2 weeks a year.
2 weeks. Where'd you come up with that number?
The week after Christmas.
No, no. Where did you come up with that number? Where'd you come up with 2 weeks?
Because that's what I've done.
Okay.
So how much do I want to?
Yeah.
I would love to take off 4 to 6 weeks a year.
Okay, so let's start with four. Mm. All right, so what do we got to do to get to four?
Produce more?
No. You got to produce the same in less time. So you're happy. Let's make up numbers here, okay? Mm. So let's say you're happy producing $500,000 a year, okay? Working 50 weeks. Mm-hmm. So to take more time off, why do you have to produce more?
I guess you have to produce the same amount
in less time. Okay. So have you ever, so does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to produce more. You have to produce the same in less amount of time. Mm-hmm. And if you, so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here as if I haven't already. Okay. If you produce the same, give your team that time off too?
I don't know.
But you could.
I could.
Okay. And that could be another benefit of working with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or you know what you could say? You said, you know, I'm going to take 4 weeks. I'll give you guys one of those weeks and not the other, but I'm going to give you a week where I'm not here and you're here to catch up on your own work.
Mm-hmm.
You're here for spring cleaning.
Right.
Or I'm going to give you an extra 2 or 3 days instead of a whole week. And now I'm going to have you have 10 days when I'm not here. Or whatever number of days, 6 days where I'm not here, to where you can get caught up. Because when you're there, they can't get caught up.
Right.
Because you're working. You're producing more shit for them to do.
Right.
So you don't have to produce more. You have to produce the same amount in less time. So now, how are we going to do that?
Expand what I do.
Okay, so good. Not expand, but do more things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So sleep is one of them. So let's use that for an example. Okay? So what's a typical 2 week? How many fillings are you going to do in 2 weeks? 50,
yeah.
20, 30, 40? I don't know. I'm making up numbers.
I don't know either.
Okay. So let's call it 50 fillings.
Okay.
Okay. So 50 fillings, what's the average reimbursement for fillings?
Depends on the services.
Give me an average. 125, 150?
Yeah.
Let's call it 150.
150.
Okay. So that's 50 times 150. That's $7,500.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you need to, so to take that time off, to replace that filling income, you need to do 3 sleep appliances. So those 3 sleep appliances or 3 implants or 2 ortho cases will give you the replacement of those 2 weeks that you're so deadly afraid to take off.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I think would happen, to be quite honest with you. I think you could take 2 weeks off more right now and your production would stay the same.
Probably, but I'm scared.
But we're scared, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're scared. You think, how scared do you think I was to start taking 10 weeks off a year?
I don't know. You seem pretty confident.
Yeah, but I say that retrospectively, right? But it's hard. It's hard and it's scary. But at the end of the day, I work backwards. I set up with, okay, I produce, let's call it 500 grand a year in 50 weeks. Okay, if I want to go to 40 weeks, what does that mean?
You produce 500 grand a year
in 40 weeks. Okay, so what do I have to give up? What's crushing my schedule? What's crushing your productivity? Fillings.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to stop doing so many fillings. And so we had this conversation before we started.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked at me like I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you look at me like I'm crazy?
Because you are.
Besides that, when I talk about fillings.
You know, you're going to have a new patient every day that needs one.
Great. So who says you have to do them tomorrow?
You don't. You have to push them out.
Okay. So the other thing, and this should make sense to everybody listening in the month of December. Month of December, why are you doing any fillings in December?
Because they were scheduled.
That's the problem.
They shouldn't have been.
But to a certain degree, they shouldn't have been. Because what are you giving up for that time? Like I went in today at 7 o'clock this morning to do an extraction and an implant on somebody that we saw a couple of days ago and wanted to get their extraction and implant done. Why did I have to go in at 7 o'clock?
So you can take 10 weeks off.
No, I had to go in at 7 o'clock because some dum-dum scheduled fillings on my schedule at 8 o'clock.
Ah.
So they schedule $300 in fillings instead of $2,500 in an implant. See, ultimately, people misunderstand me when I say you got to stop doing fillings. That's me being animated, okay? What I'm saying is you have to stop letting fillings run your schedule. You have to have a limit. Like, my body can only do X number of fillings per day. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever the number is. And you need to push your fillings out 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks. So imagine this. Do you ever have patients that have cavities and don't get them done?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they not get? There's no sense of urgency.
Right.
So if you were my patient in hygiene and I diagnosed you with a couple of fillings right now, you'd probably be like, God, I don't have time to schedule. I don't know what I'm going on. I got lots of stuff going on. Life's in the way, right?
Right.
Now, what if I said to you, Jennifer, you have a couple of cavities going on. Jennifer, I want to give you a heads up. We're booked out 12 weeks for this. I think you should go ahead and get on the schedule now.
Then I'd do it.
This is level of urgency, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we don't create any level of urgency because when would you accommodate that person for those fillings? I can see you next week. I can see you in a couple of days.
Right.
Right? And what you're doing is you're taking away prime time spots. So imagine like you travel on an airplane. Mm-hmm. Do they sell every one of those seats for $50 each way?
No.
How many seats do they sell for $50 each way?
I don't know.
10, 15, 20%?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens after you reach that number? The rest of them go up. So you have to have a limit in terms of what you can do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just going to crush yourself. You're going to limit your productivity because you're too busy doing those procedures that eat up productivity. And I'm not saying you should stop doing fillings, like literally stop doing fillings. I'm just saying that you need to limit how many you do so that you can do more crowns.
Yeah.
And I know you and I know everybody listening, if you have free time in your schedule, you'll find a way to fill it with the right things. So I want free time in my schedule because I hate free time.
Mm-hmm.
I hate holes. You
Me
said it
too.
Yourself, you hate holes, right? So what happens when you have holes?
I get antsy.
Okay, great. So now let's fill it with, make that hole only sedation or only this or only whatever it is. And make that time just that.
Yeah.
And I promise you what will happen is you'll fill that time with that. But if you fill it with garbage like fillings, you'll never have that goal, that open sore sitting at you. I expanded into another operatory once, and my Patterson rep looked at me and says, you don't need that. He says, why are you doing it? I said, because I'll walk by it every single day, and I'll see money that I'm throwing away, and I'll find a way to fill it. Because we're all goal-oriented individuals.
You're right.
I am. I'm crazy. What else you got for me?
That's it?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
So we're going to get back to me on the sleep and medical billing. I'm going to hold you accountable.
Yes, you are.
We're going to get you back on towards the middle of the year and see how we're doing so that we can have an update with you. And so everybody listening, how would somebody want to get in touch with you? How would they contact you? You have an email?
Mm-hmm.
What's your email address?
Matthews, 2 T's.
MATTHEWS.JC@gmail.com. At Gmail. Good. At least it's not AOL. You know. Yeah. Are you on Facebook?
Uh-huh.
Good. Wow.
Jennifer, you know. Cutler Matthews on
so
Facebook.
That's good because my former co-host Chuck is not on Facebook.
Oh.
How can anybody run a business? Which is what's all sales reps have, by the way. They have a business, okay?
Uh-huh.
And not have any social media presence whatsoever.
I don't know.
How can you do it?
You can't.
I just don't understand it.
I don't either.
What the hell is wrong with him? Somebody needs to talk to that joker mm-hmm. about this. So please get in touch with Jennifer if you have questions. Jennifer is great.
Thank you for being on.
And hopefully I didn't bother you guys too much. And for anybody that has questions, please visit www.tbonespeaks.com and leave a audio or written question. And I will get back on to doing my Ask T-Bone segments and being more regular on the podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.